Hi, my name's Damien O'Doherty. This is Center Maryland's The Lobby Podcast, and we are pretty excited. I think this is the first time we've ever had the Montgomery County executive on, Mark Elrich. Welcome to Center Maryland, The Lobby.
Happy to be in the lobby.
So listen, I have grown up from a public affairs standpoint, understanding Mark Elrich from a certain point of view. But I got to tell you, as somebody that follows politics in Maryland, you got to be one of the toughest victors out there. I mean, they spend so much money against you.
Yeah.
You know, and
they lied
all across all throughout your career. You know, people have spent a lot of money against you to define you, and yet time and time again, you're the one that's going to be making the decisions. I would like you to gloat a little bit. I think you've earned it, but
no.
I know you don't want to do that. But just tell me about your feelings about this race. If you could give me something like. Just how you're feeling right now, I'd love to know.
How about the dirtiest race in Montgomery County history?
Talk to me about it.
Like weeks of unmitigated lies, aided and abetted by an editorial from the Post that, you know, if anybody fact-checked it, would determine was, like, totally not fact-based.
Right.
It's really, I mean, I've won a litany of things. I mean, their collusion with the Blair campaign, where Blair was able to take the points from the Post, and instead of Blair attack me like, I think he did X, he was able to just say, the Washington Post says, the Washington Post. And that was deliberate. I mean, they know damn well what they're doing. And Blair knew damn well what they were doing.
Well, it, you know, from a brute force political angle, to just take the Washington Post, which has such a great brand in Montgomery County. I'm still right about that, right? That people still respect it. Maybe not on the local news, but they respect the brand.
But less so on endorsements.
Yeah. It's always seen as a little more. Right. So, but then they just took, you know, what, one or two opinion pieces from the Washington Post that people had read in their normal course over the many years, and then they just put millions behind it.
Yeah. So, look, I'll give you examples. So, first place, I brought the county to the brink of financial ruin or something like that. It's like, seriously? You know, we just got a AAA bond rating. They talk about how well we manage our money, how we managed ourselves through the pandemic. We made sure we were making our reserves, which we'd never achieved before, and actually did it in the middle of the pandemic. The rating agencies understand what we did, and the Post just opines that, you know, financial disaster. Their idea of a financial disaster is we paid front-facing pay to our firefighters and police during the pandemic. And yes, we paid more than other jurisdictions did. Other jurisdictions didn't have a contract which called for double time. And so we negotiated down what our contract would have cost us. I would have been happy to have gotten to a lower point. I didn't get there, but I got where I could get. But that's not financial ruin, and it certainly didn't affect us at all.
Well, look, it's got to be a great feeling to have the trust of the voters, a narrow margin like that. You know, you learn so much and you win. So you got to take that one to the bank and just relish it. Because, you know, nobody in the state of Maryland, I don't think anybody running for governor has never had to face that kind of money coming up against them, right? And so it's just, it's an amazing feat. What I want to know is, you know, I'm in the business community, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So I get a certain view of you from my colleagues or media publications, all of that. You know, but then I see a lot of cool stuff happening in Montgomery County, and I'd like to talk about that. The first thing I saw that was cool was welcoming people to the county because of its openness, its transparency. Reminded me a little bit of like Gavin Newsom. You guys were encouraging people whose rights were being denied, with the abortion decision, to come to Montgomery County. Employers, right? Talk to me about that. That was a pretty big move, I thought.
Well, you know, a lot of the places, you know, Austin's, I think, is kind of a poster child example. It's very attractive, despite being in Texas, so it's like a bubble. But the abortion decisions burst the bubble, and if you're a female employee of a company there, you got to think really hard about, you know, am I not going to be able to take a morning after pill? Are they going to, you know, if somebody drives me because I want to get an abortion to out of state or to an airplane, are they going to be sued or arrested.
Right. Every HR decision is like, yeah.
So we want to point out to people that you can come to Montgomery County. We're highly educated. We have a really strong county government. We're able to do things. We respect everybody's rights. You know, we've been very much at front and center on immigrant rights. And if it's a right, we're pretty much out there trying to protect it for people. And that, you know, your employees deserve to be working in a place that whatever happens, they know that they're not going to face any discrimination or any recriminations for decisions you make personally.
That's right.
And I think it's a selling point.
And you, I mean, you also had, some major leases all throughout the county. It sounded like, you know, I was looking at it as sort of a former political operative, and I was like, you know, say he's anti-business or whatever the rhetoric is, just if you read the hard side of the Washington Post, you can see some of the progress that's happening for sure.
But you read the Washington Business Journal. I mean, all summer long, they've been doing stories about companies coming to Montgomery County, the things we've done to bring companies to Montgomery County. When I came in, we did two things I thought were big. I worked with Sidney Katz. He was the council member who flipped and supported the minimum wage. In exchange, we agreed if I got elected, we would do a listening tour for businesses and ask them, why do we suck? And why do you tell your friends not to come here? And I made all my managers come, and then we started implementing changes, particularly in permitting and procurement, that would make this more friendly. And to me, it wasn't a stretch. I mean, we'd heard this rhetoric about the county forever. Difficult to do businesses, people don't want to come here. No one ever said, why? And so I thought, here's a novel approach. We'll ask people why. Because then we can act on it. You know, if you say your regulations are too much, I have no idea which regulation you don't like. But if you sit down with me and meet with me and you talk about this thing is really an impediment, then I can remove the impediment.
Yeah.
And as long as nobody asks me to short circuit, you know, environmental protections and the normal things that I value, then there's no reason I can't make a more business-friendly climate. And so we've been doing that. When companies were
let me say something about it. But when people, it's interesting. You want to get that message out. You're getting the message out.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's a sort of, if the business community or certain members of the business community are putting you in sort of a defensive posture from day one, before day one, then it makes it difficult, because then you always have to address what a group of people think is a concern that maybe that big tenant that you just signed up didn't think was a concern at all.
I don't think anybody comes in here blind. No tenant is going to come or not come because what the government says. They're going to look at the reality on the ground.
Schools, right.
So when we were dealing with companies looking to come here, I actually had to deal with a few people who called up and said, look, you know, our choice is you or Frederick. You know, we had previous experiences, or other people had previous experiences with you that were not good in the county. I don't mean me personally, but the county government. And I said, we've changed that. I said, your project will not get held up. We have the ability to expedite things where things need to be expedited. A good example is with changes we made with lab space. We have an accelerated process, but you had to have a tenant to get into the accelerated process. The labs came to us and said, if you have to wait till I have a tenant, it's too late. I said, they were like, if we can build, the tenants will be there before we open the building. So we changed it. We said, lab space can go forward when they're ready to build lab space, because if they're confident, they're not building buildings to be empty. This is no longer the speculative era. So if they believe that they're going to fill their buildings, we're going to help them do that, because if I don't do that, they won't come here at all. And, you know, nobody's going to wait 2 years. So we're trying to actively respond in real time. There's an issue about how high certain chemicals can go in a building. Other jurisdictions have already addressed it. We're going to address it here.
Well, a lot of people, I've worked with some significant jurisdictions that either they don't think the capital investment is worth it or it's too risky. You know, you guys are out there creating the platform for what a lot of publications are saying is that Montgomery-Frederick County corridor is one of the best in the nation for life and bioscience. Yep.
And we're going to make it bigger. I mean, we've got, when I came in, nobody's building lab space. We've got about 4 million square feet either under construction or in the process of approval. We know there are other projects coming in. That's a huge increase in lab space in Montgomery County. I'm pretty confident we're going to be able to do this. And, you know, you asked about the negative folks. I mean, what they want is giveaways. I mean, I've seen the articles from their
favorite. They want is giveaways. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I mean, you look at what, you know, Jacob Sesker called for, who's the pet child of these developers, particularly, and David Blair, which is basically increasing county subsidies. The county should subsidize. So my competition across the river doesn't do this.
Yeah.
You know, they do not give favorable zoning. They actually have higher taxes and higher exactions than Montgomery County does. We had JLL do a study and say, tell us where we rate.
Yeah, people don't know that. That's great.
And we put it up, but does the press pick it up and
tell us?
Right,
that fit into the narrative that they're understanding,
not so much. Yeah. And so we're like, and this is what vexed me, you know, if you've got 10 million square feet of empty space and you're the cheapest state in the region, your property taxes on commercial buildings are lower than anybody else in the region, which is amazing.
It is.
You know, we're like a 99-cent tax rate. You know, Tyson's Corner is $1.65 with all the special taxing district stuff.
Some real numbers.
Real D.C. is $1.85.
Right.
And it's like, so if I'm the cheapest state and I got empty space and people aren't coming here, what is the issue? Because it's obviously not you're outpriced and it's not that you have no space. And so we've tried to tackle one, the reputational issues for the county.
Right.
We want to unwind them. People have to have a reason to come. And we do suffer from some things that Virginia doesn't. Airport proximity is not to be underrated. Being across the river from downtown D.C. versus being a 30-minute metro trip or more to downtown, all those things make us a bit different. But we have real strengths, and we've been able to show that. We think we can build on them. And I don't have to give away the store to do that. And the idea that, you know, the folks who put a lot of money
into
these campaigns.
Find the right incentives, right? You're saying, you know, it's got to be the right incentives.
Yeah. So, yeah. But, you know, I talked to Victor Hoskins, who went over to Virginia.
Right, he's at Fairfax now.
Yeah, we tried to get him. And and his, you know, what he told me was, you know, you will not find me just throwing money at people. Everything doesn't require incentive. Sometimes it's like, can you expedite the processes? Can you make sure things can get built on time? That's important to people. I feel pretty strongly that there are things Fairfax does I want to imitate. And I've told the business community, I would swap the impact taxes for the special taxing districts that Virginia uses. It provides a flow of revenue that you can bond against.
Sort of
consensus-based. Well, they know they're getting something. If you give me an impact tax, if you were a developer and you were building in Bethesda, we'd hit you with an impact tax for schools and transportation. There's no guarantee that any of your money goes to Bethesda.
Right.
So you make this big payment, you're not guaranteed anything. In Virginia, they would do this with the special taxing district. If you're doing capital improvements, you're going to float a bond. The taxes are based on the bond. The taxes go away when the bond's paid. And oh, by the way, the more developers that build, the lower your tax gets, because all I'm doing is paying off the bond. So if I double my tax base, I have the amount of taxes that people have to spend. So Virginia's got a much more sensible way of doing it. I tried to get the council to look at this. There's no interest. I think with the new council, there'll be a lot of interest. You know, we spent a lot of time trying to understand our position and what our weaknesses are so we can actually grow. And, you know, I think the clear analysis is you don't have to give anything away, but you got to give people value for the money, and you better be able to deal with them in a timely way, because time is money. So I feel pretty good in terms of dealing with my views versus other people's views. What I'm doing lines pretty well with what people say I don't do. So I'm listening to Hans and Blair talk about Montgomery County's doldrums. The things, I'm more detailed about what I want to fix than what they understand. And what Blair understands is giving things away to people. Hans is kind of the same way. I just take the approach of let's give them value and they will come here, because they do this in Virginia.
Value.
You know, if you go across the river and you're investing in a place that out-taxes me, you must be getting something that makes those dollars worth spending.
Right.
So I can do that.
You just flip the script there, right?
Yep. It's like, you know, if somebody's eating your lunch, you try to figure out how they got your lunch.
Let's start there, right? We can reach a consensus around that. Talk to me about your political arc. I think aligns up probably with my professional consulting arc. I think I remember you getting into to office, what, around, I think I remember you running in 2000, right?
I ran five times. I got elected my fifth time to the council.
That's awesome.
But I always, you know, I always calculate. I had more.
I will tell you, in my young years, even when you didn't win, you were someone to be reckoned with for sure.
Well, look, I was always engaged in the community. If I lost an election, I didn't disappear like a certain candidate did for 4 years. And I mean engaged. I don't mean writing checks. So I worked with community groups in between elections, and then I would run. I never had enough money. Most of my career, I did one mailer. In 2006 or 8, whatever it was, by some miracle, I got enough money to do two mailers. I went in on that large seat on about a $65,000 budget. The other three at-large winners were between $300,000 and $400,000. And after that, next two elections, I came in first with the lowest budget of anybody. I do a lot of community work. I listen to what people have to say. I try to solve problems. I deal with the communities everybody wants to dismiss as a bunch of NIMBYs, and you know, it's just not the case. You know, people, the biggest issue in Montgomery County, and I told Josh Kurtz this the other day, is it was not neighborhoods fighting development. It used to be there was an adequate public facilities law. You had to provide schools, and you had to provide transportation, and you couldn't let the transportation network collapse, and you couldn't overcrowd your schools. And the council, for years, it's not just this council, it was everybody else. Nobody wanted to put the money into the infrastructure, and so you wound up with moratoriums. Moratoriums weren't meant to stop development. They were meant to say, if you're going to do this, put the infrastructure here.
Put your belts on. Put your belts on.
So I always looked at this as, if you don't want moratoriums, give people the schools they need. Build the classrooms, fix the intersections, or provide the public transportation, whatever. But we can solve these problems. And so instead of looking at this as a stopping mechanism, I looked at it as a mechanism to get us to do things that we should be doing. As the council and the planning board weaken the requirements of adequate public facilities, all you do is raise the temperature in the neighborhoods. They have no belief, and this is true with our master plans, nobody believes any of the stuff we put in our master plans will ever happen, because there's no money attached to it, and there's no mechanism that guarantees that what you say you're going to build to support the growth is actually going to get built. Which is why I like the special taxing district idea, because I can then...
It's like addressable.
Yes.
Right? It's like SimCity almost. Yeah. Like you could put it together right there in a manageable format versus a big macro experience.
And I'm not asking for a ton of money at the front end. I'm just saying I don't need any money at the front end. Just let me tax this stuff over 20 years as long as the bonds run. It's a lot smaller payment than the front end. And what we realized about the impact tax, which is really a problem for people. If a project penciled out in Virginia at the same price as Montgomery County, but you have an impact tax in Montgomery County, you're financing at the front end, or you have to bring in another partner to share the deal. There is none of that. You're not financing a tax in Fairfax. You're paying for it over the next 20 years.
Right.
So now your rent has to be higher for the same price building, because you need an ROI, and your ROI is no longer on the building itself, but it's the building plus the tax you had to fund. So that puts you at a competitive disadvantage. I could equalize this so there's no advantage to building in Virginia. And I've talked to developers who flat out said, if you do this, you'll get building back here. Because if the pencil's the same on both sides, there are advantages Montgomery County has. Schools is one of them. We have far fewer portables. And they do. They've got a cap on how much they can spend on schools and how much they can bond. I don't have that.
Right.
So if I've got a source of funds, I can deal with these problems. And so I feel okay. And I think the people who think somebody else had a better economic plan, if they looked at what we were actually doing, they'd realize it's pretty much what we're doing.
Yeah. They didn't get the votes. Got to get the votes.
You got to get the votes.
You know, one thing I empathize with you, I think, and I see myself in your business community, or I see my colleagues sometimes, because I'm from the Baltimore area. And, you know, there gets to be a culture in the business community where the leaders in the business community, and oftentimes they're kind of ensconced leaders that have been around for a while with a particular industry or business or perspective. And, you know, you just start your, as colleagues in the community, what do you talk about? You start grinding on the elected officials, or you start talking about what's wrong. And then you're like, hey, man, I'm a leader. And I'm up here talking to the most important people about everything that's wrong. And, you know, as tough as we are on our hometowns and our communities, there's a lot of stuff going right. We had this thing in Baltimore, the Baltimore Banner, just by publishing, you know, stories about stuff that had nothing to do with politics or nothing, you know, it was about, like, cheesesteaks or, you know, like, community can kind of come together and see a sense of itself in a way that's not being presented on simply political terms, you know.
So you know who Steve Fuller is?
Yeah.
So I've gone to all those, his annual summit.
Right.
In Virginia, and I would find myself often the only Maryland politician there for sure, and not even all the council members in Virginia were there, but I would go because I was interested in what he had to say. And what struck me was you're in a
room. Figuring out how your lunch was stolen, right?
Yes, well, you're in a room with, but to your point about, you know, kind of like eating ourselves alive, you go into that room with 300 or 400 business people, and they start asking questions. It is not a bitch session against about everything the government possibly does. It's a discussion about how do we do better? Right. What are the issues you all are facing?
Society issues.
It's like, how do we manage this in a way?
Yeah.
And I'm just really struck at the difference. And, you know, in my most conspiratorial mode, I think, like, the developers who build on both sides of the river might be perfectly happy to turn Montgomery County into a bedroom community and let all the businesses go to Virginia. And I'm not happy being a bedroom community. I would like to have a stronger economic base to pay for the things that we need to pay for.
Right.
And I just look, because I know the same guys who complain about, oh my God, your taxes here, are paying the taxes in Fairfax County.
Right.
Or building in downtown
D.C. Right?
Yeah. It's like, hello. I said, you're paying 65 more cents than you would pay in Montgomery County, and you're telling me that I'm killing you. Now, I may be killing you because of my processes. I can fix that. But let's separate the things that are real impediments to moving versus the idea that my taxes are somehow onerous compared to Fairfax's, because they're not. And some people think, I would just say this. I used to
County
say,
executive, with your big win, and it was a big win, you know, every win that you've had has been a big win. I think that you should just get out there and go on the offensive, start talking about exactly what you're telling me, because I think I know Montgomery County Twitter, but I don't know Montgomery County like you know Montgomery County, and it is revealing, and it forces a more elevated conversation than what you get trapped in a political season, you know?
We've struggled with this, and, you know, part of it, I will confess, is partly me when I was a council member for 12 years. I don't think I did 5 press releases. I'm not a press release guy.
And you're a coffee guy. You look like a coffee. I am
totally a coffee guy. and when I talk,
sorry for the water.
Water's okay, but coffee is always better. But when I was talking about things we wanted to do with WMATA, we're working on joint development agreement for White Flint with the University of Maryland, bringing an AI university graduate level AI program to White Flint to work with to build up the life sciences businesses. It took 2 years. I didn't spend 2 years telling people I was going to do this, because in truth, you don't know whether it's just going to be smoke and mirrors and not happen, or whether you actually got to the point. But we got to the point with the university, and they said, we want to bring a program over there. We got to the point with WMATA, where JLL came in and said, yes, life sciences is the highest and best use of your property in White Flint. And so then I could talk about it more. But
I mean, you got a county executive here that's you talking about JLL. I mean, he's talking to the business community.
I know who these people are. I mean, it's like,
why doesn't the real estate community use our own JLL report, right?
I think, you know, people like to focus on ideology. But ideology,
it's easier, it's quicker, it's dirtier, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, there's no ideology that has a prescription for how to run a government on any side. Adam Smith didn't talk about it. Yeah. Karl Marx didn't talk about it. It was mostly economics. And I feel like they use the ideology, what they assume, I think, and they don't understand that. First place, I believe that we're in the 21st century and we shouldn't be captured by either of the older ideologies. We should be thinking about how do you solve problems and what ideological basis should we evolve to? And I think, you know, capitalism lacks any kind of social consciousness. They have to be usually forced to do things, whether it's cleaning up water or employing people fairly. Those are all things that happened because they were forced to do it,
yeah.
Not because anybody said, hey, you know, we could be a great business community.
Yeah.
That's John D. Rockefeller. That thought never occurred to him, nor Andrew Carnegie. On the other hand, you know, state-run economies have not performed very well because there's not a lot of incentive to do things. There's not a lot of incentive, like with the old Bell Atlantic system. You know, those old phones were perfectly good forever because it's the only phone you're going to have.
Right.
And I don't have to compete. I think of, you know, just picking on WSSC for because, like, you know, the idea of rebranding WSSC. I'm sorry, you're the only source of water in this region. I guarantee you, nobody says, God, I'd drink more water if only the brand was different. So spending a lot of money to change your brand, I thought, was like a stunning...
Yeah, sometimes it's an operations issue, right?
It's like, yeah, deal with the under... Plus, despite the operations, people are drinking all the water.
Right.
It's like you've got a captive audience. The name of your organization really doesn't mean anything to them. So I feel like, you know, I'm pretty flexible about how I approach things because I need to solve the problem. If I say this is my ideological solution and I'm only going to do that, then I won't solve the problem. And why do you believe anything if it's not because you think believing what you're going to do is actually going to solve the problem?
I think people get a view in this community that listen to this podcast or this convention, I think they feel that from you because they know your staff, you know? And your staff is the most respected group of people in this building or any other county seat you'll find. I mean, you just have amazing people. And I know they're excited to get to work for you, so congratulations.
Look, we captured some really good people.
Yeah.
And I know that if they thought this was just, you know, my flights of fancy about what ought to be, that would not be a good place to work. And so, you know, we've always been grounded in how do you get to a solution. I told the Post this, and I've told the developers, if you think I'm as radical as you think I am, how am I going to pay for any of this if I don't have a healthy business community? So your ability to be successful and generate tax revenues lets me fund schools, lets me fund social programs, lets me build a new homeless shelter in the middle of the pandemic. If I don't have that money, I don't do any of that stuff. So you all have to chill out.
We've learned you got yes, and we've learned you got one of the best fastballs in all of the county executive dumb. And we learned that on the campaign trail. Congratulations,
hey,
County Executive Elrich. Great to talk with you. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about Montgomery County. It's exciting to hear about, you know, your second term. Thank you, County Executive. You're real. Thank you, County Executive.
Appreciate Thank you. It.